Ah, those darn millennials. That's right. We've got a full hour dedicated to those born from 1981 to 1996. Specifically, we're going to be talking to a couple of millennials about their experiences of what their own economy looks like, what the heck happened, and what makes life so much more difficult now than it was 50 years ago for those 20 and 30-year-olds. Or is it really that much more difficult, but we just like to talk about it a lot more because we have talk shows to do. Welcome to the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. We ask you to follow us on Twitter. Join in the conversation. We are at Full Story WSHU. Follow us, join in, tweet us, put in some comments. Now, our millennial guests today are from a range of ages and from across Connecticut and New York, and we'll get to all of them over the next hour. But I'd like to quickly set the stage by talking with Dr. Martin Cantor. He's the director of the Long Island Center for Socioeconomic Policy and a former Suffolk County Economic Development Commissioner. Dr. Cantor, thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you.
What are the main economic issues that millennials have to face?
Well, when I was chief economist for the Destination Long Island, we had done a survey of millennials. And what was interesting was, millennials are a little different than the boomers growing up. Boomers didn't have anywhere near the technology that millennials now have at their disposal. So habits are different. When we first sent out the survey, we issued paper surveys. Now, most of us of the boomer generation, when they see a paper survey, they'll fill it out and send it in. Because we just don't trust online surveys because of hacking, et cetera. However, when we sent out paper surveys to the millennials, we didn't get any responses. However, when we put the survey on Reddit, in one night we got 450 responses. So there's a different focus on life from obviously the boomers and millennials, and technology, it plays a major factor. But some of the results of that survey, in particular on Long Island, but it could be replicated in almost any community. We found that 90% of the respondents felt they were frustrated with the Long Island economy. A lot of that had to do with some of the college degrees they were getting. We found that retail, journalism, no disrespect to you guys, but these are the lower paying sectors in the economy were some of the majors that the millennials were graduating with, which segues into why not only is debt so high, but why millennials can't pay down the debt. We found that 60% lived with their parents, 22% rented apartments, and 12% lived in illegal rental apartments on Long Island. They didn't earn very much. 46% earned between 20 and 30,000, primarily because of the degrees they had. Also, it could be the length of time in the workforce. But some of the things that were really telling to me as an economic developer and an economist were 60% tried to find a job in the past year, so they were dissatisfied with the jobs they had. And the reasons they stated were 60% couldn't find jobs aligned with their skills, and 78% were unable to find jobs aligned with their salary needs. Those are very important, and that ties into some of the financial budget, household budget problems that millennials find. 68% said finding a job is important to remain on Long Island, or in fact in the communities where they live. That's why we find a lot of out migration to some of the more enlightened communities like Austin, Texas, which is a high-tech, walkable community. They also had lack of confidence in the people who run Long Island. They said 73% felt that Long Island would not be able to attract higher-paying industries where they work. And this is some of the feelings in other communities across the country as well. Then when it comes down to home ownership, 85% they plan to buy a house, but 86% said that housing options on Long Island aren't what they want, and then 93% said the housing costs were too high, which makes sense given the fact that so many of them said that they couldn't find jobs that matched their salary requirements. 89% said, and they're correct, flight of Long Island's young people will hurt the Long Island economy. And this could be said for any suburban community, is that millennials are very mobile. They can pick up and go to anywhere in the country where they can find a job that meets their salary requirements, meets their skill sets, gives them the lifestyle that they want. And so we have a more mobile, more well-connected, intellectually and education-wise group of folks, demographic folks, because of the computers. Baby boomers did not have computers. The only way we found information was from newspapers or the radio. But now, through the internet, whether it be Facebook or LinkedIn or social other forms of social media, information is transferred instantaneously, which helped millennials find out what's going on in other places of the country and define their housing patterns and where they live.
Dr. Cantor, I'm gonna jump in for 1 second here because we do have some millennials in the studio with us today. Others will be joining us on the phone. Let me bring in just a few of those to get some quick reactions to what you're saying. Justin DeVellis is one of those with us. You heard what Dr. Cantor has to say. Is he pretty much on target?
I think a lot of the things that Dr. Cantor said were on target. I think a lot of them also made me think about how they show themselves in my life. You know, he talked about the information sharing, social media being available to us, and that not being available to baby boomers. I think the only thing that jumped out to me, and it was particularly what you said in your last one of your last statements about social media, is yes, we are able to view more information. More information is readily available to us. But my question would be, because there's so much information out there now and it's so easily accessible and it's so easy to put information out there, that there's also a lot of information out there that is it's out there, but it's not necessarily the correct information. You know, so I just wanted to get your take on that. It's not necessarily there's more information out there, yes, and we're sharing information more, but that also opens the door for more disinformation sharing.
You happen to be right. In fact, my own habits are just in terms of news. There are certain news media which I will not read. What I do, and part of the things, you know, when you go to doctor school, I like to joke about, you know, they teach you to take a look at the same fact from several different viewpoints, because, you know, you'll get the truth, you know, the darn truth and the damn truth. And so what the social media forces you to do is to make sure what you're reading is factual, and you're 100% correct. I see stuff on social media that I know for a fact is not correct, but it's out there. So it makes it also difficult. You're absolutely right for millennials that what they're reading, they got to make sure that what they're reading is correct. So social media adds an additional layer of responsibility to the reader to make sure what they're reading is correct.
Dr. Cantor, two other guests in the studio with us today are Chuck Scott and also Jess Shalou. I want to turn it back a little bit more to the money side of this. Jess, I'd like to start with you. As a millennial, do you think that you're going to have as many opportunities economically as your parents have? Will you be able to match their style of living?
I mean, that's something I really hope to be able to get to. I haven't really thought too much about how I would compare to them. I know right now, as I'm starting off with all my school debt, it seems a little bit overwhelming, but like when you get into when you're going into your freshman year, you know what you're signing up for, but as you know, you're still a kid, you don't really know exactly what that means 100%. For where I am, I work a bunch of jobs. I'm trying my best to support myself and make a living, and you know, you can only do what you can do, and when you can't make it, you just have to take that extra step to keep going.
Chuck, do you feel that your generation is burdened by economic difficulties compared to those that may possibly have come before you?
Yeah, I mean, I know last time I lived at home in my 20s, being 30 now, living on my own, I was going through a knee surgery, and I got a point-blank question from my own mom asking me, do you think it's really as bad as it is or will be? I said, yeah, we're going to see a completely different world in 50 years than what any of us are completely used to. We're the generation that's going through the technological changes, and the complete evolution of exactly what we are as people and how we connect with each other in the new global age. And a lot of that, the proof that I tried to give her was when her and my father were married and they were building their own house, he worked part-time for the state. She was a bank teller. They were able to buy land to build a house, start a life, have a child with no worries really financially. I mean, I was one of the most, you know, planned childs probably there was. And that's just not affordable for me, for someone who works here at Sacred Heart, that teaches at Sacred Heart, that also calls play-by-play on the side, that is also working on his own project to try and get off the ground in a documentary. Working all of those jobs and doing all of those things, I can afford $550 a month in rent here in Bridgeport. So it's certainly much different. And the ability for millennials, to me, to get out of the burden of student loans. I mean, whenever I hear someone like the Power Jackpot, that everyone, did you buy your ticket? The only thing that came to my mind was, oh, that would get me out of student loan debt. It's not, oh, I'm going to build a house, I'm going to do this, I'm going to buy this, that would get me out of student loan debt. That's where my first thought went to. It's just different. I mean, the things that we ask for in colleges, they're putting in, costs a lot more than when our parents went to college and the kind of perks that they got in college. And everything that's capitalism has touched unregulated now seems to have driven the inflation that we're dealing with today as adults.
In the studio with me today, Chuck Scott, Justin DeVellis, and Jess Shalhoub. And when we come back in a moment, we're going to be talking with Kathy Koch. Kathy is the Director of Tax Policy at Ernst & Young Americas, and they put out an amazing report about the millennial economy and what millennials think about and whether or not they feel that something good is going to happen to them in the future. You're listening to The Full Story on WSHU. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. There are a lot of thoughts, I think a lot of misconceptions about what millennials care about, what they think about. And if you talk to some boomers, boomers just have some really nasty and mean things to say about millennials. If you honestly listen to them, I mean, there's some bad things that are said. And to clear up some of the misconceptions, we're going to bring in Kathy Koch for a moment. Kathy Koch is the Director of Tax Policy at Ernst & Young Americas. And like I was saying just a moment ago, Ernst & Young put out this amazing report about the millennial economy 2018. You could find it online. Kathy, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
What are the major findings from your report?
Well, the major findings are millennials do work hard, and they do value, you know, the right path to a good career. Millennials are actually, they're progressing. They were a little behind the rest of their cohorts or former cohorts before in 2016, but they are catching up. And I think maybe most importantly, millennials are, I think, despite the fact that they're catching up and they work hard, they are permanently affected, I think, by the experiences of recessions through which they lived. Mm. They remain very risk-averse about the future and very concerned about retirement, things like retirement and having enough money when they're older. It's very interesting to me.
It's. I noticed in your report, one of the things that really jumped out at me, well, there were a number of things that jumped out, but one of them was that millennials seem to be somewhat pessimistic.
They are pessimistic, aren't they? And I find that interesting because while I'm really not even near a millennial, I was, in fact, that age once, and I don't think I ever thought about Social Security. I don't think anybody, I ever thought, oh, what will the economy be like in a year from now? And while their outlook on the economy today has really improved. 41% believe the economy today is good or excellent, and that's compared to only 20% who felt that way in 2016. They still, if you ask them, what about a year from now, only a third of them think that they're going to be better off or the economy is going to be better off than it is now, and then fully a third think it's going to be the same, and a third think it's going to be worse. So while I think they notice what's going on in the economy today, they notice increases in, you know, employment, et cetera, decrements in the unemployment rate, they still don't seem to trust these signals, and their view of the future is still much as it was in 2016.
Again, going back to that pessimism, which I think when boomers are hearing this, they may be a little shocked by it. And I'm going to give you an example. I was fortunate enough to go see Bruce Springsteen on Broadway the other month. And one of the things that really jumped out at me during the show, and he said what he missed about being the age of the early 20s and so on, as many millennials are, he said he missed being a blank page, where you're at that age where just the future is open to you and you can do whatever you want because you can become whomever you want to do. And it sounds from your report that many millennials don't feel that way. And I'm going to ask them also in a second, because that pessimism is driving them. They're being driven more out of fear.
They do seem to be driven more out of fear. Again, they don't really believe the economy is something they can depend on. Their worries about the future, their top three worries are 75% of them worry about Social Security being unavailable. 70% worry about not having enough money to live off of. And then 71% worry about America's debt and deficit. Now, I don't know about you, but I never thought about America's debt and deficit when I don't think I thought about it until I started working for the government. In 2016, in fact, their top three worries were not enough money, debt, and future job opportunities. That job opportunities worry has been, ameliorated somewhat, but they still have these concerns that I believe, the Great Recession, when a lot of these people were very young in high school, I think they watched what happened to their families and to their communities. I think 63% of them believe that their community was in recession in 2016. That number's gone down, but to be aware that your community is in recession when you're that young, I think that's significant. And they have a lot of debt, too. And that may be a separate topic, but I think the student debt burdens that they carry, we all read about it, we all hear about it, but this generation seems to have more a sensitivity or more maybe a realistic sense of what it costs to pay down debt and how that limits other choices that you might have.
We have two millennials who are joining us on the phone. I'd like to bring them in. They've been very patient. Mahina Choi Ellis and also Anna Leone. Mahina, would you describe yourself as pessimistic?
Hi. Pessimistic. The moment she said that, I kind of, my ears perked up a little bit. I don't think it's pessimistic. I think, if anything, it's realistic. I might have a more different background from any of the other guests here, but I am first generation American on my mother's side. I'm also the second in my family to go to college. I was born and raised in Honolulu, Hawaii. And if you're to go back to your point of at my age, you aren't exactly thinking about, debt or the national debt or paying off student loans. One of the things growing up, inequality in my town, you would say, was very, very blatant. And so for that reason, when I decided to go to college, the first person in my family to go to college, I knew going in that I knew that I'd have to take out student loans. I knew that I would have to face paying off student loans because at the end of the day, that was the only option available to me. So for that reason, I don't believe we're pessimistic. I think we're realistic because we can see what's going on in our world economically right now.
From our guests sitting across from me in the studio, everyone is nodding in agreement. Anna Leone, did the greatest recession affect you directly? Did you look around at that point and did you say, I have to plan for the future. I have to worry about debt. I have to save. I have to do all these things because I've learned this at a very young age.
Hi, yes. I did actually. During that time period, my dad had actually lost his job that he had been at for about 15 years. And it was kind of an eye-opener to me when we talk about the job market and finding a job that you want to stay with a company and, building this experience and having company value. I think that really hit home for me in realizing that, we're just kind of replaceable. It used to be this kind of idea of once you get a job and you're with a company for a certain amount of time, they value you and they grow, your worth grows as you stay with the company. But when something like that happens, I mean, my dad had been there for 15 plus years. It kind of was an eye opener to all of us in my family that, you know, budget cuts had to be made. And unfortunately, he wasn't within a certain driving range of his job and he was unfortunately let go. And I think that really opened my eyes to having to realize, oh my goodness, I have to put away money and I have to save for, God forbid, if this happens down the road when you have a family to provide for in 10, 15 years, you know, you want to be prepared for that. And I think that's something, not like she had said before, not so much pessimistic, but realistic, realizing that this is something that we may have to prepare for.
Kathy Koch, Director of Tax Policy at Ernst & Young Americas. What Anna is saying pretty much is exactly what your report was saying, that the recession simply affected the millennials. The Great Recession, I should say, affected the millennials, and it changed the entire outlook of their lives.
I think it did. And I think as these women are saying, they saw things happen to their family that perhaps my generation didn't see happen. It's really interesting because this has farther-reaching consequences than, you know, I as a millennial am worried because I have a realistic view of what my obligations financially will be in the future. Not only, you know, is it kind of, it's personalized, the impact of the financials, but, you know, as we see in the press, some millennials are reporting, there was a New York Times report about the debt limiting their home ownership, although we have seen home ownership rise in levels that are refreshing. But we also see that most feel 45% of our respondents thought that student debt was limiting career options. We know that millennials they admire very much entrepreneurship and startups. And I think as a society, we always thought this generation was kind of the startup generation, and in fact, it turns out that they're the least startup generation that we've seen in history. These percentages are small. It's gone from 6% self-employed in prior generations to 4% self-employed in prior generations or owning a business, but still, that makes a difference. These people respect entrepreneurship. They respect startups. They understand the vital role in our economy, but 38% say that they don't have the financial means to start a business. That, you know, again, we see debt suppressing important things kind of in lifestyle development that we see in other generations.
Kathy, I'm going to bring in, and I just want to mention also, we have a number of emails, but we're going to get to those later in the program because we have just a few moments left with Kathy Koch. I want to bring in Jess's comments because I saw her nodding when you were saying you were talking about student debt and money. How can you think about buying a home and planning for the future when you know that you're going to be handling this debt for many years to come?
Well, it's stressful. I have 5 jobs and work.
I'm sorry. You have how many jobs?
I have 5 jobs.
You have 5 jobs.
They're not all full time.
I was going to say, yeah. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here right now.
No, I have. It's
so,
about,
so you have 5 part-time jobs?
Yes. So I work as a video editor at a local magazine in town. I'm a student. I have my own freelance video editing thing going on the side. I have my own photography business, and I work part-time at a deli on the weekends. I hope that I made 5. I was just going off the flip. But with all that going on, it's you keep adding it up, and you're trying to see the bigger picture, which is the future. And what you were saying about having a blank page and that we might see that in a different way now,
mm-hmm.
I still see the blank page, which is...
You do.
I do, which is part of the reason why I started my photography business with my friend. And part of that was just to do what you like. And although you have this like debt looming over you, you have to do what you love and go after what you want. And, you know, my business, it actually came up and it's doing well. And we just see that keep going. So, you know, it's all retrospective. You have to have a bigger mind of what you're looking at. And I'm not pessimistic about it. I'm looking forward to the future.
Justin, what do you think about when you hear the boomers disparaging the millennials, looking down on them? Do you say, look, you guys just don't understand what we're going through? And Did we leave you with a mess?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough question, right? It's a tough question because I think at that point, baby boomers may just be looking to generalize millennials because they're maybe just frustrated and they're looking for someone to describe or maybe even just take out a little anger on. Or it's easier to say, oh, well, it's because of the millennials here or the millennials are doing this now. I think, and Jess talked about all the jobs she has, which I think are awesome. But honestly, I've been pretty lucky in that I knew I was going to go to college. Everyone in my family went to college. My parents helped me out a ton, and that's been amazing. But now just starting to pay my student loans, you're trying to find a full-time job. And if you don't get, you know, if you don't get a salaried position, like if you're getting paid hourly working full-time and you're kept, you know, maybe right at 40 hours or even under 40 hours, just about, even if you're getting paid every 2 weeks, if you get that check back and, you know, you have to pay rent on your own too, you may look at that check and you're kind of figuring how you end up making it work for the 2 weeks, especially having to pay bills on top of all that. You're left with not a huge chunk for yourself. So it's almost like you're going every 2 weeks and you're just looking for more opportunity. And it's not like you can live lavishly at all. You go 2 weeks to 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so I sympathize with even adults, I mean, who may even have kids working full-time, maybe minimum wage jobs. I mean, I sympathize because I don't know how they make it work. I give them a lot of credit.
There are many of them in this region. We've done a number of programs where they basically said the number of people who just struggle to pay the debt. And we're talking about those who are older than you and with kids trying to get food and do all the rest of that. And at the end of the paycheck, they have nothing. You're not alone. Just so you know. Kathy, we only have 2-3 minutes left with you. From your report that you have with Ernst & Young, give us some of the other findings that will get us thinking about millennials and your report after this program is done.
Sure. I mean, when we talked about this gig economy, and I was surprised we did see a surprising increase in home ownership amongst those who report having a collection of part-time jobs. So I applaud your participants there, whose name I forget, and I'm sorry, for kind of piecing together in a kind of a work life that may be full of interesting things. And that leads me to one of my kind of favorite topics here, which is, you know, millennials are risk-averse in their careers. That's our kind of a headline. And this is an attitude that's existed since 2016. And when we kind of drill down, we talk about, you know, what's the best way to advance your career? And 36% of our respondents said to stay with one company and work your way up the corporate ladder. And yet, this is, a generation of really entrepreneurial people. So we see people who would like to be entrepreneurial, who would like to be creative, and they are choosing a rather, you know, a more secure path. They're, you know, just like Justin said, you know, get that job, stick with it, have the sure thing and make it work for you. Very few of our respondents, only a fifth, said, you know, to get ahead, you move from job to job. And I think traditionally, we know you sometimes get bigger salary increases when you job hop. A fifth said to attain additional education or job training. 13% said the way to get ahead is to start your own business, but then we see the, you know, kind of the stress of debt and finances weigh on that option. So you have a lot of people who are sticking in the corporate system because it seems like a sure thing. Now, that's interesting because when we ask them about institutions and who do you trust, who don't you trust, corporations were at the bottom of the list of, you know, 10 options sports stars, the military, local government, et cetera. And corporations were at the bottom of the list. And that's interesting that it's not generally trusted. They don't rely on corporations to get ahead. They actually, most respondents said, you know, it's up to me to acquire the skills to get ahead, not up to my employer. But they're in a position where it makes them feel maybe more comfortable financially. And I think that's an interesting conflict to be in. And I think corporations could do a lot by messaging, by speaking to this generation, by speaking about the good they do, and by also unlocking the entrepreneurial spirit of this group of people.
Kathy Koch is Director of Tax Policy at Ernst & Young Americas. Kathy, please come back with us in the future. I know you have to go.
I would love to, and thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you. We're talking about the millennials today. It's the full story on WSHU. Stay with us. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with Mahina, Anna, Jess, Justin, and Chuck. This is the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. We're talking about millennials. We're talking about their views of the world, the economy. BuzzFeed recently came out with an article. It's entitled How Millennials Became the Burnout Generation. I just want to read a short part of it, and I'm going to have Chuck respond to it. It says, and I quote, "We're deeply in debt, working more hours and more jobs for less pay and less security, struggling to achieve the same standards of living as our parents, operating in psychological and physical precariousness, all while being told that if we just work harder, meritocracy will prevail and we'll begin thriving. The carrot dangling in front of us is the dream that the to-do list will end, or at least become far more manageable." What do you think, Chuck?
Basically just one big sigh of just not again. The working hard, the trust, as we talked in the last segment, the trust of corporations, like in my own, this whole working hard, or if you work hard, the meritocracy part, that's where our distrust to me kind of comes from. And it becomes offensive when we hear about the baby boomers and that they have on media shows talking about how we're lazy, we don't get it or anything like that. I hearken back to when I was at Sports Illustrated. Those were sometimes 20-hour days, sleeping in the studio to get up in the morning at 5 a.m. to make sure the edit was good so we could publish at 9 a.m. And then we have to do another shoot that day, and then I have to travel to Washington, D.C. So this idea that we're not working hard is completely thrown out the window. And the idea that we think that we can have a future that is even at all similar as our parents, I think, is, at least with three creatives here in studio like ourselves, we are at some point going to get burnt out way quicker. I'm almost there at times. I know I was talking with my girlfriend over the break. Working at Shum afforded about a week and a half of time off, and instead of just lounging at home in my sweatpants, I was shooting for three full days and trying to get a documentary off the ground, because I can't do that while I'm at my job, while I'm teaching, while I'm doing play-by-play on the weekends. And so instead of taking that time, I work straight through. My girlfriend was like, "I'm worried about you getting burnt out." And sure enough, we get into this week, and it's hard for me to get up to go to work because I know this weekend I have two more games to do play-by-play. The following weekend, we're filming again for that documentary. It's our lasted effort because Mother Nature didn't quite cooperate during break. And then more games at the end of January. And then we get into the events with Sacred Heart with my job here. So there's no time. I was talking with her and she said, "Oh, so February is the month of not doing anything on the weekends, right?" It's like, "No, well, we have this event, and then I probably will get these games, and then there'll be playoffs for this league." And,
I got to tell you this, with everything that you guys are doing and all the different jobs, I am very appreciative that you found time to come in and do this show today. Yep. I want to get to one of the emails, and then I'd like to have Dr. Martin Cantor respond to it. Dr. Cantor, thanks for holding on. Mike from Connecticut wrote to us and said, "Millennials are the most tech-advanced category of workers today. However, most tech-creative jobs don't come with benefits or job security. Our parents' generation used to be able to graduate high school and have a comfortable job with health insurance and a full pension. Did boomers dry up the well, or are corporations getting more greedy?" Your response, please.
Oh, what a loaded question. First, before I address that, let me just address one of your in-studio people. When they talked about salaries, a statistic came out just yesterday that 78% of American workers live from paycheck to paycheck. So it's not only the millennial generation which feels the pinch, it's everybody.
That's 78% across the board.
Across the United States, 78%. So it's more. And the second thing I'd like to bring up in terms of the salaries, since the year 2000, if you adjust for inflation, wages haven't gone up. Yet expenses, the real expenses that people live with right now, whether it be taxes, education, energy costs, food, every aspect of expense in this country has gone up way more, exponentially more, than the adjusted for inflation wages. And that's the pinch that everybody is feeling in the country. Now, in terms of corporations and the bennies, yeah, the you know, I remember when I was growing up, the greatest generation was looking at the boomers and saying, you guys have long hair. And when I grew up, I had long hair and mutton chop sideburns and everything. And they kept on saying, yeah, cut your hair and get a job. That's what everybody heard from the greatest generation to the boomers. So when the millennials hear that people degrade them or the boomers degrade them, it's, you know, we went through the same thing. Not saying it's right, but it's just give comfort that it just seems that every preceding generation looks at the current generation and says, wow, how bad are they? Now, in terms of in terms of health insurance and the benefits, it's things have gotten completely different. When I was looking for work, and I'm a CPA, and I got tired of working for corporations and saying work hard and you'll get ahead and get more money, and I got off that merry-go-round in the 1980s and started my own accounting practice, because I said, and I really applaud those people who are entrepreneurs on your panel. That's the only way you get ahead is by having your own business, because as hard as you work, the money goes into your pocket and now the corporations. Now, is it different? Have the corporations tightened up in terms of health benefits? Yeah, because health costs have gone up. That's one of the biggest economic sectors that has been growing in this country has been delivery health care. And a lot of that has to do with the technology that we all benefit from a longer life expectancy. Somebody has to pay for that. Somebody has to pay for those miracle drugs, and that comes through the health industry. And if you think things are tough right now in health benefits, just take a hard look at the folks that are pushing single payer health plans. That's going to turn the healthcare industry upside down. And the single-payer plan, that means it's taxpayer-funded and the government funds it. So it's not going to get any better. And, yeah, it's the corporations, I think that there will be some relief in that, only because the folks that are the potential employees out there, corporations are going to have to offer better benefits to attract the better workers. And certainly the millennials bring a lot to the table in terms of technology and skill sets. You know, it used to be, just as anecdotally, it used to be when I went into the job market, you just had to know your skill and be very skilled at what you were bringing to the table. Now you have to bring two or three different skill sets to an employer, and that includes not only your primary skill, but also your technology skills. And that adds an additional challenge. And I know a lot of my contemporaries who are boomers do not have the technology skills.
No, and some of them even still use flip phones. Dr. Cantor, hold on one second. I want to bring in Mahina Choi Ellis and Anna Leone once again. Mahina, Anna, I want to talk to you, and it's going to sound like I'm getting a little personal, but I don't really mean it that way. Millennials and getting married and having kids. Do you find that in your circle of friends that people you know are delaying marriage, that they're getting married later and maybe putting off starting families? Mahina, I'll start with you.
Yeah. So actually, interestingly enough, so I'm 23, about to turn 24. My twin sister actually just had a baby, and they're definitely struggling. But the interesting part to that is they didn't go to college. So they're working about 4 to 5 jobs. Thankfully, she's also a really talented photographer. But other than her, none of my friends have had kind of the confidence financially enough to have a child or even get married. The average cost of a marriage, or the average cost of a wedding right now, is around $25,000 to $35,000. And it's just kind of like, if you can't afford that, if you can't even afford to pay your loans, how can you get married and then therefore how can you have children? So I only know one person my age at this point personally that has a child.
Anna, what about you?
Hi, yes. So actually, I kind of have a little bit of a different situation. I'm actually a girlfriend to somebody in the military, and, you know, they get married very young. And so a lot of people our age, I'm 22 going on 23, are actually getting married. But to Naheem's point, a lot of them aren't having weddings. A lot of them are actually either eloping or having these very small intimate weddings. Because, like she said, the cost of an average wedding is now around 20, 30 grand, which is crazy because that's kind of what you pay with school. And, you know, you think of how else you can use that money. So a lot of people that I know that if they are getting married, they're definitely waiting to have children until they're more financially stable. But if they are having weddings, it's definitely a lot smaller.
Jess Shalhoub is in the studio with us. Are you empathizing with this?
Yeah, and I'm on kind of the same board with my experiences. One of my good friends has been with her boyfriend forever, and she's excited about getting married, but they will not do anything until they both have financially stable jobs. And, you know, for her, like, she wants to get going with it all, but you know, you don't know when they're going to be able to get going and when anybody can in their position can do that.
But how do you know if you have a financially stable job? From what I've been hearing from these reports and so on, millennials are somewhat pessimistic. I mean, do you think you'll ever have a stable job?
I mean, I think you have to have hope that you will have a stable job for sure. That pays you enough to be able to plan that far ahead in the future for the family, like you talked about, and the kids and the wedding. But for me, and I can't speak on your guys' experiences, my, you know, fellow panelists in the studio, I can really only speak on, you know, my experience. And I'm not, that's not on my docket right now. It's not at the forefront for what I'm trying to do.
Is this money? Is it because of money?
I think money wouldn't be the only thing. But I think it definitely plays into it. I mean, if you don't have the means to do it, but also it comes down to what you're motivated to do. I think with boomers, the formula for what they thought was what success was is different than what we as millennials have found to be successful in, you know, the workforce or in life right now. The world's completely changed.
So for the boomers, marriage, job, family, house. Pretty simple.
Yeah. I mean, that may have been their idea of success that they were trying to attain, but maybe us as millennials have a different view on the world because of how much it's changed and how much we've experienced already at a young age.
Chuck?
It's just funny because we talked about earlier, one of the guests said that as a baby boomer, you got yelled at, long hair, mutton chops, cut your hair, get a job.
Oh, absolutely.
So we were introduced through baby boomers, through the hippie movement, these alternative lifestyles. And now that we see millennials, I mean, especially in media like we work, you see a lot of people. I live out of a van. I refurbished it to just travel the country with all my equipment and shoot a bunch of cool things, make money that way. We utilize social media to go to ridiculous places, get these fantastic photos and make money off of it. So we're seeing all these alternative lifestyles. People have entire families and just go on the road and live out of a refurbished van. And so to me, it's a bit funny having this conversation, talking about how many different lifestyles millennials go through. Where'd that come out of? It came out of the baby boomers and kind of refuting that white picket fence idea as the American dream. That doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, and to be honest, I don't think it's for all boomers. The other week I met a gentleman who, when he was 16, he's from Wilton at the age of 16, and he's a boomer. He's like me. He hitchhiked across Iran and Pakistan and went, you know, to the Himalayas. So all the boomers, I don't think they're all the same either.
Right. That's what it's funny to hear someone who admits they're a boomer and say long hair and mutton chops, but we're still getting that same generational, like, finger wag at us of, why are you growing your hair long? Why are you living out of a van? It's like,
it's a pattern.
We'll look through the late 60s. Where do you think we got these ideas?
Yeah. From those corrupt boomer parents. Dr. Cantor, are you finding from your studies that you're seeing some of the millennials simply saying, look, I'm going to hold off on marriage going to hold off on family for a while because there are other things I have to do. And you know what? I want financial stability. I watched what my parents went through in the Great Recession. I don't want that for me or for my kids.
Well, I'll tell you, I have, forget about the statistics, I can tell you that I have a son who is resisting getting married. He's got a lot of girlfriends, but he is resisting getting married because he saw how my wife and I struggled financially to raise three kids and have a house. Well, we don't have a picket fence, but have a house. And so he's reluctant to do that. And as for the millennials traveling in a van, I would love to get into a van and just go across the country.
Wouldn't that be nice?
I would do that in a heartbeat. And I think earlier in the show, someone talked about winning the lottery and paying off student loans. If I ever won the lottery, I would just close my computer and leave my desk and never come back, you know, because Ed Koch, the former mayor of New York City, used to say, you know, get ready, world, put up your dukes. He says, because it's not easy out there, and it hasn't been easy out there as far as I can remember. I'm a student of history, and no generation has had it easy. Every generation has had its own challenges to overcome. Unfortunately, what's happened right now is that with the economy and increasing exponentially since the 80s, and with wages have not grown as quickly as all the other costs, including housing, it presents an unusual challenge for the millennial generation to make the earn the wages or earn the income to have the lifestyle that some of their parents have.
We're just about, Dr. Cantor, we're just about out of time. I just want to get some quick comments in from Anna Leone and Mahina Choi Ellis because they've been so patient. I haven't gotten to them a lot. I promise to have all of you back again sometime in the future. Anna, final thoughts from you, please.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything he's saying. It's just really hard because you want to prioritize what's good for your life, and you have your own set dream. It's like it was said before, it's not really the American dream anymore. Jobs are requiring a lot more skill set. So it's not just going from high school to college and then finding a job. It's going from high school to college to then getting your master's or a PhD to show that you have the qualifications, getting that extra learning and doing it for yourself and to further yourself in this world. So you kind of have to put things into perspective, and it kind of thinks that, you know, maybe we want to have like the relationships and the families and all that, but that kind of has to take a back burner because you have to once again be realistic about all of this and realize what needs to be put first in the right order so that way you can have that thing later on.
Mahina, I'm sorry, we only have 15 seconds. Quickly, please.
Yeah, so I just think just the same thing that she was just saying. We need to be realistic, and we would love to have the picket fence and everything like that, but I think that there needs to be some serious next steps, whether that be governmental or with our generation itself. There's hope. There's hope. But we're realistic, and I think that's the way it has to stay for now.
Mahina, Anna, thank you. Dr. Cantor, thank you. My thanks to Kathy Koch from a little bit earlier. And in the studio, Jess Shalhoub, Justin DeVellis, Chuck Scott, my thanks to all of you. We'll get you all back soon. The program today was produced by Natalie Chafari. Thank you, Natalie. Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Ann Lopez is the producer. Terry Sheridan is our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you for being part of The Full Story.